Well, at the end of the month, they're going to be paying for things like for their very little, you know, it might be just some basic for the home, for, you know, the car, things that are very tangible that they can see, touch, and feel. Hey, it costs you that. And as they mature into high school, we can get very detailed.
This is Parent Them Successful with author and licensed educational psychologist, Jessica Shields. Your child no longer has to struggle. On this parenting podcast, we unravel the complexities of the education system, give insight into intervention services, and offer encouragement and tools alongside your parenting journey. It's time for your child to thrive. Welcome your host, LEP educator and mom of four, Jessica Shields.
Hello, parent warrior, and welcome to the Parent Them Successful podcast. I am so glad you are tuning in. Let me ask you a question. What comes to mind when you hear the phrase financial literacy? Is it something that only parents should teach their children, or do you think the schools should add this part to their educational curriculum? Now, I've heard many old school parents say that they took a class or two in this area where they learned how to balance a checkbook, maybe learned about the basics of financial principles that may not have been taught at home. I've also seen on rare occasions classroom teachers who turn their entire class into a token economy where students pay rent for desks and earn class money for doing their work. Now, the token economy may work in an elementary school or middle school setting, but what about when they get to high school? Does it work there? And should it be a separate class period dedicated to teaching financial principles? Well, believe it or not, some states are requiring this to be included in the standard curriculum while others are not. But why? To help us take a deeper dive, our special guest is going to shed some light on the situation and give you tools you need to address the issues, possibly with your school board. So stick around for some solid jewels and also hang around for this week's parenting challenge and your loving reminder. You definitely don't want to miss it. But first, let me introduce you to Vince Shorb. Vince is one of the country's leading advocates for financial wellness and creates partnerships with financial service providers that enhance their brand, increase awareness, highlight their expertise, and deepen relationships with prospects and clients. After spending 15 years in financial services working one-on-one with more than 20,000 people, he founded the National Financial Educators Council, that's NFEC. It's an organization dedicated to combating the financial literacy illiteracy epidemic. He is the current CEO of the NFEC, an IACET accredited company, and a certified B Corporation. He has led financial education program development with three of the top 20 in revenue financial services companies in the U.S., and he's built personal finance programming that has been used by over 1,400 financial service organizations with clients that are from all sizes. So Shorb works with financial service providers to develop successful financial education initiatives at the community level as well. And his mission is to provide value to financial services partners who want to make a difference in the financial wellness of their communities while participating in cause-based campaigns that benefit their business goals. So let me tell you, we are in for a treat. Believe me. Welcome to the show, Vince. How's it going today?
Jessica, thanks for having me. Doing great. I appreciate that kind introduction. And I always appreciate helping us get the message out and promoting financial wellness, especially with our youth.
Absolutely. You know, it's all about the youth. I love working with the youth, supporting parents, supporting the youth. And I love when I can have guests on who have that same heart. And I want to talk about your heart. You have such an extensive background in the financial field. Why is this community-based work so dear to your heart?
Well, I think it's, you know, I see a solution to problems that people are facing every day. And when I say problems, I say the majority of people are facing these problems. It's not a limited amount. If we look at the scope of the country, most people are going through financial struggles. Most people are going through financial stress. It can range from not knowing if they're going to have a place to live tomorrow to, you know, more pay planning for retirement, planning for kids' college. All the struggles are the same. And I see a solution, right? And I think a lot of it comes through education. And when I say financial education, I mean it in a broad term, meaning addressing the knowledge, addressing behaviors, addressing their confidence, helping them set up systems to apply what they learn. So I'm talking about a real broad definition of financial education. So it's really, I want to help them. It stemmed from my own struggles, you know, after high school and college, and even in high school, a lot of it stems from frustration. I was very frustrated at school, having to take subjects I knew I'd never learn, and just wishing, and I was in the back of the class reading my dad's foreclosure books and investing books, right? So I had an interest in action, but it was missing. So I think frustration, hope for the future, protecting the next generation, it's all the reason I'm here today.
I love it. And I love that it came out of your, you know, a place of struggle for you. And sometimes when things come out of a place of struggle, that's what drives us to want to do something about it, you know, and I love that in your story. And I think it's important that we talk about why financial literacy or financial education is just so important to have in schools. Why is that from your point of view?
Yeah, if we look at, I mean, if we look at when financial habits form, they form very young. And I think that's due to a few things. Media, there's advertisers targeting kids from age zero on, right? Highly sophisticated ads. We have influencers showing the nice lifestyle. The biggest kids' channels on YouTube are unboxing and hauling videos that shows little kids unboxing new toys and teenagers showing their haul from shopping. So these behaviors form young. Brown University did a study, 50,000 youth. It showed but at 9 years old, financial habits are formed in youth, especially centered around chores. So they form young. And they stay with them through the years. So my feeling is, hey, it's critical to help shape these habits in kids early. So elementary schools, it's critical to adopt. For high schools, I think their sole role should be preparing youth for the realities of life. Financial literacy benefits 100% of students when we look at other subjects. For instance, science benefits less than 6% of people financially after they graduate. And I had to take chemistry, biology. If we look at advanced mathematics, right? Algebra and higher, less than 25% ever need that in their day-to-day life. You know, I was doing a remodeling project. I had to add like 1 5/8 plus 1 3/4 to do this measurement. Hey, Google, they added it for me, right? And I had my tape measure, I had my pencil. I didn't need to do it. So if we look back through history, school subjects have remained the same roughly for 100 years. We have computers now. We have ChatGPT. Financial literacy benefits 100% of students, especially those that are in the lowest socioeconomic status. It's more critical because that could be, you know, their security, right? That's their security coming out onto their own. And it's just a critical life skill for them to have before they get into those early mistakes. College debt. Doing one little mistake on your credit, that's 5-7 years, right? Or messing up on your first rent, that could be, you can maybe not be able to rent a place for the near future. So the consequences are so severe, and it benefits 100% of students. And there's plenty of subjects we can fill in with personal finance.
So good. I mean, you know, hopefully, like, I'm already thinking about what you're saying. I'm like, wow, yes, you're right. Personal finance does benefit 100% of us. It's everybody. So absolutely, that is such a good point. And it's just, you know, there's a lack of this type of education. And, you know, you kind of touched on this before, but how has this lack of financial literacy within the population hurt our youth or even our families?
Yeah, no, I think there's a symbiotic relationship with the youth and the families, right? When the youth are hurt, right? And this could be college debt, getting credit cards early. I made the mistake. Hey, I got free pizzas, free shirts to get.
Yeah.
I was a busboy and a waiter. I think my first credit card was like $8,000 I got approved for. It's
oh,
like, oh
wow.
Great. You know, like 18 years old. I'm like, okay, cool. But, you know, those little mistakes, getting into debt at a young age can have a long lasting impact. It can put you off on retirement, can put you off on a lot of things.
Mm.
But there's a symbiotic relationship with youth and parents. So when these youth are out there making these mistakes, what happens? You get boomerang kids or kids that never leave the home. So there's a lot of 30-year-olds, 35, 40-year-olds today that are still at home because of these issues, or that move out for a little bit and then need parents to help them pay certain bills or asking friends and family for that. So I'm a big believer in training youth to be contributing members to the family. It's a family unit, and it will be always moving forward, right? We're a family. We're stick together. We're going to help each other. We're going to contribute effectively and do our part in our shared duty of this small tribe, which we call a family.
Right.
And I think that's what parents, we really need to start training is, hey, how do I be, you know, it's not just I'm the kid, you take care of me. No, you're growing up into an adulthood, you know, starting your teenage years and going on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you contribute back to this family so we can all work together and all achieve good things together?
Now, I'm going to ask you a hot button question.
I'm ready.
So, chores. Should parents be paying kids to do chores? Or is that, you know, you're talking about this family and everybody supporting. Is that helping with financial literacy? Is it, in your opinion, does it hinder something or some motivation in some way to be independent? Just what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, a huge believer in chores and starting at a young age. Now, you know, some parents say, hey, I want the kid to do some chores just without getting paid for them because it's part of the family contribution. That's cool. Other parents say, hey, you know, I just want to pay for everything. That's fine. I think chores are critical. I think there should be some chores where they're able to earn money as well, even if there's some mandated chores, the ability to earn money. But it's not just chores. It's developing a work ethic, helping them connect working with earning as opposed to just receiving, you know, and so forth. I also feel it's important at a young age that the kids are actually contributing back to the family. So let's say we're paying a kid, I'm going to make up a number to make math easy for me, $100 a month for these chores that they do. Well, at the end of the month, they're going to be paying for things like for their very little, you know, it might be just some basic for the home, for, you know, the car, things that are very tangible that they can see, touch, and feel. Hey, it costs you that. And as they mature into high school, we can get very detailed. Hey, here's what your share of the cell phone bill. Here's what your share of the house is. Here's what your share of the food is. Here's what your share of the electric and gas. So of that $100, the parents may be getting back $60 and they're paying taxes and so forth. So, you know, $40 is what you're really paying them, but they're paying for their bills. This is like training wheels on a bike. I'm not just going to throw a kid out on a bike, no training wheels, say, figure it out. Like my dad, when he taught me to drive, he took me to this wide open parking lot. Right? Have me turn on the car, turn it off.
Yeah.
Turn on the car and take my foot off the brake and glide for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then practice steering. But I still remember anytime I get next to these light poles, my hands are sweaty. I'd get tensed up. But he's taught me in stages. And that's what we got to do with money. I think chores provide the stair step thing. And the kids are able to develop the habits that they need, like delayed gratification, opportunity cost. So if you're at the store, kid says, hey, I want this mom, I want this dad. Wonderful. Do you have that money saved to buy it, right? Oh, no. Okay, we're going to save that. Or you have money to save, buy one. Great. And maybe even parents get into the lending conversation. Great, I'll loan you that at 10% interest. That will be taken off your next thing. So we're teaching them, you know. I don't want to be like a hard money lender or, you know, some loan shark to kids, but this is reality. At 18-year-old, if they move out, they're going to face this. And it's really just prepping them for real life scenarios.
And it sounds like you may not be a big supporter of just giving kids allowance, like helping them to understand you have to work for it. Because I'm getting a lot of feedback from adults saying these kids are too entitled. And maybe it's because we're giving them everything. I don't know. It's
Life is easy these days. Even the hardest areas of America, life is easy for people. I mean, it's tough and rough, but if you go back 100 years, everybody was out there working. Everybody was, you know, if you had a farm, everybody's out there because you needed it to survive. And I think if we can, you know, bridge that to kids these days and say, hey, this is what the family does to survive. We work together, we bond together, we grow together, we celebrate successes together. I think that's just a great way to bond and get everybody on the same page.
Yeah. And you know, speaking of like parents, you know, our role in this, do you think it, you know, teaching financial literacy should be solely the responsibility of the parent? Just what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I don't feel it's the sole responsibility of parents. However, it really is because schools aren't doing an adequate job. Mm-hmm. I know parents have a lot on their plate, right? It's tough to raise kids, to work, to take care of kids, to do the day-to-day, drop them off, make their all that stuff. I mean, it's time, effort, mm-hmm. energy. And it's tough to say, hey, parents, you're the one responsible for your kids' personal finance, and it's going to protect them in the future. But it is something we need to do. The good news is there's easy ways to do it or just ways we can incorporate that into daily life, like teachable moments. If we're shopping and we're picking one can of soup over the other, why do we pick that, right? Are we looking mm-hmm. at pricing? How are we doing that? If we go to the bank and are talking to, let's say you're going to, you know, go to get a loan or something, you're bringing the kid in. So they're experiencing professional conversation. The chores, another thing that will help, you know, just having these conversations. I think also evaluating media and ads is very critical. Mm. Hey, what's this ad trying to convince you of? So getting those, you know, those little kid, the ads that are targeting little kids, sitting down with them. Hey, what's this ad trying to convince you of? What imagery are they using? What does it make you want to buy it? Right. How do you feel? Right. And they're getting to explain this thing, and they're understanding that this is a persuasive content, and it's really interesting because kids under 7, 8, 9, just depending on their developmental stage, they can't determine you know, non-advertisement content from advertising and commercial content. Mm-hmm. So we really need to train them on that. Just a simple thing like that can help them see through this consumerism blanket that they're trying to throw over everybody. So there's those teachable moments that we can do as parents. And I think, you know, again, I hate to put another responsibility on parents, but I want your kids safe. I want them protected. I won't want them going through those sleepless nights and the, you know, wondering mm-hmm. if their car's going to break down or run out of gas on the way mm-hmm. home. I'm protected. Mm-hmm. And you know, if the parents are out there can fit that in their time, I would highly suggest it.
Yeah. And you know, I was thinking back when you were talking about the persuasiveness of the ads, you kind of reminded me of something I almost totally forgot about. When I was an English teacher at the high school, we had this unit that we had to teach on ethos, pathos, logos, and it was all about looking at, we did actually look at ads. We had to look at text and ads and kind of deconstruct it to see what was the message, what they're trying to do, you know. So there's some of that going on in some pockets of education, but it's not intentionally to help children or students even understand that these things take place in order to get you to buy or get you to spend more than you know, it wasn't really targeted in that way. It was more of a critical thinking assignment. But you know, it just made me think back to that moment when I had to teach those types of lessons and how fun it would have been to really have commercials and break it down and really took it from that angle. So that's, you just kind of brought back an old memory.
Yeah. And, you know, they're so sophisticated with these ads. You know, back when I grew up, it was TV, radio, and smoke signals, right? I don't want to age myself. But you know, nowadays it's highly targeted. It goes from TV to your phone, to your computer, to mm-hmm. pop-up. It's that.
Don't forget the algorithm.
refollow algorithm, all this. And, you know, they're mm-hmm. trying to convince kids either to purchase or to convince their parents to mm-hmm. purchase. So once again, there's that symbiotic relationship. It's, hey, the kids are pressuring the parents based off ads they see. Now the parents are getting the ads plus the kids saying, hey, I want this, I want this. So it's just really advertising is an incredible force. And I think people need to realize that and the impact it has on little kids. We actually have a campaign called Stop Advertising to Kids, simply because under 8 years old, we don't feel it's ethical. Above eight, I would argue to push it up to 18, but I think at 8 years old, we have the full moral authority, right? Mm-hmm. It should not be done. We can't evaluate persuasive and non-persuasive content. Mm-hmm. That's a campaign we're pursuing, and we hope that people would join that and just really help to promote, safe places for kids to grow up, be kids, and learn valuable lessons in life, build character and values that will, help them in the future, as opposed to worry about what shoes they have on, and those other things that kids are worried about today.
Yeah. And something else you said, speaking of, advertising to kids, and really it's advertising to kids to bug their parents. And yeah. I see that parents do fall into that, and also parents, this is what I'm hearing from parents themselves. They're telling me, Jessica, I need help with financial literacy too. I spend too much, or I'm struggling in this area. I don't know how to teach my kids to be better. So then there's this cyclical situation where, these habits are passed down and just from generation to generation, and the struggle still continues to be pervasive. Are you seeing the same thing?
Yeah, that is a challenge. I think that's one of the biggest factors that plays in the role of parents not teaching their kids. They feel, hey, I haven't done it, I can't teach it. You can. And I think even just being vulnerable and being able to share these experiences with your kids, and you don't have to get too deep into detail, mm-hmm. but you can let them know, hey, we're here with the debt. The goal is to reduce this to this level. Let's play some games where we can, you turn off if we could reduce the electricity bill by $20 this month, we'll go out and have a pizza, right?
I like that. Mm-hmm.
So we can play these games. The funny thing is, when the parents implement those, then the kids, if they're really wanting, if it's built up the right way, the kids are like, hey, mom, shut off the light. So the kids are saying, the mom, oh, great, now I got myself into this. But there's some fun things that we can do like that. Hey, let's, and we can sit down, go over the electric bill for the last, 5 months. Hey, here's what it was. Here's what average. And they have the chart on the bills anyway. So you can look back to last year. Hey, here's mm-hmm. where the thing was. Back in July was hot. It's hot again this year. CR bills went up. Now, if we can reduce, the August bill was $200 last year. If we reduce that to 180, let's do something fun as a family, bowling, something, out. And it just brings them together. Again, we don't have to be the experts. Mm-hmm. It's just getting them involved, just raising awareness. I remember when I moved on my own, I didn't know electric, gas. I didn't know a lot of that stuff was bills that you had to pay. I kind of figured it's kind of part of a rude awakening, as I struggled to get more shifts. I was begging everybody at that kitchen I worked at that time, hey, can mm-hmm. I pick up a shift? Because I had to get a deposit plus that. So it's interesting. But, I think it's, we can, as parents, we can teach even when our finances aren't good. And I think that's the most critical time, because your kids are going to probably experience challenges at some point in their life, right? If we look at the average person across America, I'd say 80% plus have gone through financial, I'm making up the number, but a vast majority of people, pretty much everybody I've ever talked to, have gone through financial challenges at some point mm-hmm. in their life. Unless there's some trust fund kid or something like that that's always set, but that's not the circle I run around with. The average person, right? And I think, as parents, we can have fun with it. We can make it encouraging and just do these silly games that kind of make it a unique experience that they'll remember.
And then please add, don't be ashamed, right? Because sometimes parents don't want their children in their business, quote unquote. But I mean, there's some things that you can still do, and it's going to be on the parent to be a little bit vulnerable in those moments and share. Yeah. You have to get past the, I don't want my kids in my business,
Yeah, there's always a balance, but I agree. And it's, mm-hmm. there is a lot of shame with money, but just realize if you look at half the people out there that drive these nice cars, they're not in a good financial position. I saw mm-hmm. all their credit reports. I saw their bank statements. I know, right? So it's like, they might have a Mercedes, but you peel that back a few levels and it's like worried for them. Right.
Exactly.
So, there's no reason to feel shame. It's something, it's always a work in progress. Sometimes our finance will be better than other times. It's just a ebb and flow of money. You're going to get through it.
And, I think that it would be helpful to have schools support in some way with these, you know, challenges. But what, and I know some states are more progressive than others, but what's holding some states back from moving forward with statewide financial literacy initiatives?
Yeah, I think the big thing is even in the states that have it, we just put out a report that says every state fails financial literacy mandates. Most states, about half the states don't require any mandates. The other half that do completely fail to meet the minimum education standards, meaning having a qualified teacher, having funding, having independent research-based curriculum, having the time and rigor needed. Some states will have, say, like, hey, we have 8 to 12 hours to teach us, and they'll mix it in random other subjects. So there's some base things that all these states are missing. So we say every state fails. We wrote the policy and framework guide for financial literacy education to give those legislatures guidelines to follow. Over the years, we've been asked by over a handful of state representatives, House of Representatives on the national scale to help with their, support their financial literacy initiative. We always said no, and we said, here's why, and here's what we, here's how you can improve it. Mm-hmm. So we put that in a framework for legislatures. And really the goal is to advance financial education so it's treated like a normal subject, math, science, English, et cetera. And so these kids are leaving prepared. And I think if a child, a success barometer that we can measure and see is the child ready and confident to make near-term financial decisions? Mm. What are some goals? How to move out on your own, pay your own bills, car ownership. If they're going to college, they should definitely know how to, how to pick a college based on their goals and how to minimize debt. Mm-hmm. Like managing their credit cards, that's a pitfall, a little mistake, managing their rental history. Those near-term challenges, we can leave these kids with that. The majority of kids will help, we can help the majority of kids avoid those mistakes that can last, again, 2, 3, 5, 10 years in some cases.
Right.
And I think, our role is really just advancing the rigor of personal finance education in schools. We do work with a lot of schools in helping them try to advance that. But, it's really up to the state legislatures and those types of people. And we're working on that angle as well, really advocating for higher standards and higher rigor, just to make sure these kids are protected. And they get, this is the, information they'll actually use and they need. And we're at a place where we can help them. So let's just, bring this together.
Exactly. And as parents, we want to help too. We want to help bring change about. A lot of us do. And, what can we do? What role can we play in changing this narrative? Do we need to go to our school board? Is that a place we should go? What should we, be writing letters? What should we be doing? We can give you as a resource. Just tell us what to do.
Yeah. I think all of the above, I think parents, we need to be active on these school boards. Again, the school boards really work for parents. At least that's what it should be. It should be a relationship where they listen to parents and they have progressive discussions toward, making sure that the values and the goals are in alignment. And we can make some progress there. We actually, if you just type in every state fails financial literacy mandates, we're going to be the first one on there. And it'll give data. And also it has the policy and framework manual for high school financial literacy mandates. You can provide that to schools. Feel free. That's shareable. It's a PDF. It's shareable. Raising the awareness, I think that gives a good framework for how to communicate the importance of financial education in schools. Active in the school board meeting. Get involved with teaching your kids and talking to other parents about it. So the grassroots thing, writing letters to the boards. Again, some boards are more listen better than others. So it just really depends. But I think all the above and the end goal, I think if we focus them on the end goal, let's just make sure that, hey, we're giving these kids the things needed for their protection, for their security. If we look at that, base human needs. As a psychologist, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where it's security, safety, where it's love and belonging, where it's these basic things, physiological needs, the lower two-thirds are really related to money. And if you don't have it, the security, the safety is not there, the physiological needs, food, water, shelter, some kind of those base needs that we need. And I would hope that more and more schools would see through that. But yeah, great question.
Yes. And thank you so much. This has been a wonderful, wonderful conversation. And I just want to give you room to add any final advice you would like to leave with parents, and also making sure we know how to find you.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say parents just, you know, get involved with teaching your kids in some way. We have a lot of free resources available for parents. We have a chore guide and activity broke down based on the levels. We have, if you just type in financial literacy for kids in Google NFEC, you'll be able to get that. We also have some sample activities. We have some discussion points. It's all free to parents. We typically serve schools, larger financial services. So we're more of a business to business, but we provide a lot of free resources for parents. So our website's financialeducatorscouncil.org. And again, if you just type in financial literacy resources for kids in FEC, you'll get a lot. I always love hearing from people on LinkedIn. My last name is Shorb, S-H-O-R-B, first name Vince. Love to connect with you there. I can direct you to the right area as well. But Jessica, I do love your show. I love, you have a Facebook group, Parenting from Their Strengths. And I think that echoes a lot of what we talked about with, you know, parenting from whatever strength you have when it comes to personal finance. If your finances aren't there, that's okay. What's the strength you have in communicating with that with their kids? And I think every parent has something important to share with their kids when it comes about money. And I just encourage you to be involved. And I appreciate you having me here today.
Thank you. And I'm definitely going to make sure all those are linked in the show notes. And for the parent listening, by now, I hope that you are thinking about how you can use this information to better support your child. Or maybe you have a friend or a family member in mind who can use this information. This is great. That means that you have a caring heart for others. So first, I want to challenge you. Think about something that that Vince shared today. Think about some of the issues that were raised. What role will you play in making things better for the next generation? And as I leave you with this loving reminder, just remember that you can be the change you want to see. And always remember that you don't have to do it alone. Well, I surely hope that this episode has blessed you. And if it has, simply hit the follow or subscribe button so that you don't miss any new episodes. And as you're thinking about that loved one, that coworker, that family friend, hey, share the link, parentthemsuccessful.com, because parenting is a village work. Right? And if you are the type of parent who is serious about better supporting your child's growth and development, join my email list at strongermindsstrongeryouth.com/join the list. And of course, again, everything will be in the show notes, all links. Hey, Parent Warrior, I really do appreciate you. And I thank you so much for listening. So until next time, be blessed and love on your children.
Thank you for listening to the Parent Them Successful with licensed educational psychologist, Jessica Shields. We're so glad you've joined us and would love to connect with you outside of the show. To find more information about our services, the Empower House Academy, or to take our quiz, What's Your Parenting Style? Go to StrongerMindStrongerYouth.com. Feel free to email us directly at info@StrongerMindStrongerYouth.com. We'd love to hear from you. Other ways to stay connected are on Instagram and Facebook by searching Stronger Mind, Stronger Youth, and on Twitter at @official_SMSY. Until next time, be well and love your children, for they are a gift from the Lord.